Coming up on the show today, American bases in the Middle East attacked more than previously disclosed.
So now we know that U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria have been attacked with either drones or rockets at least 13 times over the past week.
Plus, the U.S. is balancing its support of Israel with calls for a delay in an expected invasion of Gaza.
It's part of Biden's push to buy more time to secure delivery of much-needed aid for civilians, the extraction of several hundred Palestinian Americans trapped in Gaza, and hostage negotiations.
And later, an update from Jerusalem and the latest from the U.S. House of Representatives. Today is Wednesday, October 25th. This is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in Washington, I'm Steve Karish. News from the Pentagon in just a moment. We begin today, though, at the White House. As an Israeli ground invasion on Gaza approaches, President Joe Biden is facing the challenges of balancing unwavering support for America's closest ally in the Middle East with international demands for more robust protections for civilians in Gaza and Israeli restraint to avoid a broader war in the Middle East. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wiedekuswara has this report.
As airstrikes in Gaza continue, President Joe Biden has been urging Israel to consider the consequences of what Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu calls its mighty vengeance on Hamas.
Are you encouraging the Israelis to delay invasion?
It's part of Biden's push to buy more time to secure delivery of much-needed aid for civilians, the extraction of several hundred Palestinian Americans trapped in Gaza, and hostage negotiations. Four hostages, including two Americans, have been released from among the more than 200 people that Israeli officials say were abducted by Hamas during its coordinated attacks on Israeli soil on October 7th that killed at least 1,400 people.
The attacks by Hamas did not happen in a vacuum. The Palestinian people have been subjected to 56 years of suffocating occupation.
Those remarks by United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres at the UN Security Council on Tuesday prompted criticism from Gilad Erdan, Israeli ambassador to the UN.
The UN is failing, and you, Mr. Secretary General, have lost all morality and impartiality.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, also at the Security Council on Tuesday, warned Tehran against widening the war as Israel braces for more attacks from Iran-backed groups such as Hezbollah in Lebanon that are likely to intensify once Israel begins its ground invasion. Blinken delivered a forceful defense of Israel's military actions, but issued the administration's strongest urging to Israel so far to avoid harm to civilians.
It means food, water, medicine, and other essential humanitarian assistance must be able to flow into Gaza and to the people who need them.
The White House clarifies the humanitarian pause that Blinken called for is not the same as a ceasefire, which National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says will only benefit Hamas right now.
This is war. It is combat. It is bloody. It is ugly. And it's going to be messy. And innocent civilians are going to be hurt going forward.
Since October 7, Israeli airstrikes have killed more than 5,000 people in Gaza, according to the Hamas-controlled Ministry of Health, and displaced more than a million people. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News.
It's a busy day at the Pentagon. The U.S. is sending military advisors to Israel, and there's news that American bases in Syria and Iraq have been attacked more often than we'd been told. For the latest, I'm joined by VOA's Pentagon correspondent, Carla Babb.
So now we know that U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria have been attacked with either drones or rockets at least 13 times over the past week. That was reported by Voice of America earlier today. We knew that there had been more than 10 bases that had been attacked, the Pentagon announcing later in the day that that number was at least 13. And here is the breakdown. There was an attack in southern Syria against the Entente garrison on Monday. On Saturday, we've learned that there was a drone that targeted Al-Assad Air Base in western Iraq. There were three separate attacks on Friday at Al-Harir Air Base in northern Iraq. On Thursday, there were four different attacks across Iraq and Syria. There were four additional attacks on October the 18th, according to officials. Two drones targeted Al-Tanf garrison. That was the one that I mentioned in Syria that had been attacked this week as well. One of those drones was shot down. The other drone actually reached the base, resulting in minor injuries to about 20 personnel. And then U.S. forces in northern Iraq shot down another drone. And there were no injuries or damage to that attack in northern Iraq. But then in western Iraq, at Al-Assad base again, two drones in two separate attacks targeted that base there. One was shot down. The other resulted in minor injuries to coalition forces. I've been told that four personnel were injured in that attack. The good news is all of those who have been injured returned to duty. However, during all of these attacks, there was another false scare at Al-Assad Air Base where service members thought that a drone or a rocket was coming in and they went to take cover. During that time, one U.S. contractor had a cardiac arrest, had an episode, and actually died while she was sheltering, thinking that there was going to be an attack. There actually wasn't an attack that day, but there has been one death as a result of all of these actions happening across Iraq and Syria.
Do we know who is responsible for these attacks?
Well, the Pentagon has been very clear about that, and I asked Pentagon Press Secretary Brigadier General Pat Ryder about that today, and he told me that Iran is responsible. They believe that Iranian-backed militias in Iraq and Syria are causing all of these attacks.
Now, Carla, changing gears, another story coming out of the Pentagon today is that American military advisors are going to be headed into Israel. Do we know who's going, how many of them, and what they're going to be doing?
We do not have specific numbers of who all is going, but the point person, I should say, is General James Glynn. Now, he is somebody who has been very involved with wars against Islamic insurgents for years. He was one of the point people that the U.S. had with operations in Mosul. He is going to be advising the Israelis on anything that they do with an expected ground offensive, because I have been told by officials that this will be even harder than it was in Mosul. Gaza is massive. Gaza City is massive, a big urban area. And on top of that, there are all of these underground tunnels that Israeli forces will have to deal with. So a long battle ahead should Israelis start a ground offensive to eradicate the area from Hamas militants, which is what they have said they want to do.
Now, Carla, looking at history, certainly starting with Vietnam and going forward, when American military advisors go someplace, it often signals the beginning of larger American involvement. Is there any sense at the Pentagon that this is going to be a big commitment from the United States?
The U.S. has been clear to this point. They've said that no U.S. boots on the ground in any sort of invasion that's going to be going on in Israel or in Gaza. They want to keep this Israel's war. This is not something that the Israelis have asked for. They have asked for support in the tune of weapons, but not with boots on the ground. While that may have been something that history has, there's absolutely no indication at this point that U.S. forces will help with any sort of ground invasion actually going in, other than advising from afar. However, while that is happening, there are all of these attacks going on that I just told you about throughout the Middle East. And so the U.S. is saying we see a significant threat for escalating this conflict outside of Israel and Gaza into the broader Middle East. And the U.S. is trying to urge anybody who thinks that they want to expand this fight not to do so. That is why you see not one, but two aircraft carriers in the region. And that is why more forces are getting on, are getting placed on prepared to deploy orders. And that is why you see a multiple Patriot batteries and a THAAD battery entering the Middle East for air defense to protect U.S. forces, because the Pentagon says that all U.S. forces have the inherent right to defend themselves and will do so if they are attacked.
Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent. Carla, thanks for your reporting on this issue.
You're welcome.
Another day has gone by in Washington, and Congress is no closer to having a Speaker of the House of Representatives. As Sagar Meghani reports, the morning's frontrunner has withdrawn from the race.
The GOP nominated Tom Emmer this morning, putting the number three House Republican's name up for a vote to become the House's top official. But hours later, GOP sources tell the AP Emmer abruptly pulled out, facing both hardline opposition and Donald Trump, who ripped him on social media. Emmer is the third Republican to fail in a bid to replace Kevin McCarthy, who was ousted exactly 3 weeks ago, paralyzing the House amid GOP dysfunction. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
Following a vote among Republicans Tuesday night in Washington, Louisiana Representative Mike Johnson has emerged as the next person up for the job. However, there are still more negotiating to do among Republicans before he'd face a vote of the full House of Representatives. And here are some more stories we're following from around the world. 33 states are suing Meta Platforms, the owner of Facebook, Instagram, and others. They're accusing it of damaging young people's mental health through the addictive nature of their social media platforms. The suit filed Tuesday alleges that Meta knowingly installed addictive features on its social media platforms and has collected data on children younger than 13 without their parents' consent. It's a violation of federal law. And Jenna Ellis, a lawyer who supported former U.S. President Donald Trump's baseless claims that he was cheated out of winning re-election in 2020, pleaded guilty on Tuesday to illegally working to overturn his loss in the state of Georgia. She also agreed to testify against him and others in upcoming trials. In a related story, ABC News is reporting that Trump's former chief of staff, Mark Meadows, has been granted immunity from prosecution in exchange for his testimony against Trump in the trial over the events of the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Palestinian officials are reporting an increase in casualties, and Lebanon is concerned about the war spilling across the border into their country. VOA's Rick Pantaleo spoke with correspondent Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem, who gave us an update on the conflict.
It's been reported that Palestinians are saying hundreds of people have been killed in new Israeli attacks on Gaza. Can you tell us about that and give us an update on casualties?
Yes, we're now in the, 10th day of the war, and the Palestinian death toll is over 6,000. And the Israeli death toll from the Hamas assault, which started war, is over 1,400. And Israel is still poised for a ground invasion. War is far from being over.
From what I understand, the IDF chief has said that the Gaza ground offensive has been delayed by tactical and strategic considerations. And while it hasn't so far launched this campaign, it has increased its aerial bombardment of the Gaza Strip.
What Israel says is that the aerial bombardment is meant to sort of pave the way for ground incursion. Israel says that it's not starting the ground invasion because of tactical considerations, one of which, of course, is pressure from President Biden to solve the humanitarian issue or at least make some forward movement on it. There are, you know, tens of thousands of Palestinians who have nowhere to go, who are sleeping in the streets. A humanitarian crisis is growing. At the same time, there are 220 Israeli hostages. And the thinking is once that ground invasion starts, any chances to free the hostages, it becomes much less likely that they'll be able to do that.
And finally, Linda, there is concern of hostilities expanding across the border into Lebanon. How are people there reacting to this possibility of the conflict spilling over into their country? How are they preparing for this possibility? And has Lebanon-based Hezbollah announced any intended involvement with the conflict?
Well, Hezbollah is already involved in the conflict. You know, for the past 10 days, they have been firing anti-tank missiles at Israeli army positions and its soldiers. Israel has been firing back. There have been casualties on both sides, although, you know, a few on both sides. And Israel says that it is carefully watching Hezbollah. Hezbollah has at least 150,000 rockets that can reach parts of Israel. In Lebanon, the population is very nervous about the conflict expanding. Lebanon is a very small country, and Israel has warned that if Hezbollah does launch a full-scale assault on Israel, it will see all of Lebanese infrastructure as possible targets. So Lebanese do not want their country destroyed. So sort of is a sense that, you know, Hezbollah is participating just enough to be able to say to Hamas, we're supporting you, but without going in. Now, of course, that could change, but that's, I think, where we are right now.
That's VOA's Rick Pantaleo speaking with Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem. From VOA, it's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. Fears of a new conflict are growing as Turkey and Azerbaijan demand a corridor through Armenian territory after last month's forced exodus of ethnic Armenians from the disputed Nagorno-Karabakh region. As Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, the demands come as Iran hosts peace talks between Armenia and Azerbaijan.
Turkish and Azerbaijani military on Monday started 3 days of drills across Azerbaijan, including its autonomous region of Nakhchivan on the border with Turkey. The drills took place after the two countries' leaders called for a 40-kilometer-long corridor through Armenian territory to connect the Azerbaijani territories. Known as the Zangezur Corridor, it's of critical importance to the two allies. Hussein Baja is the head of the Foreign Policy Institute, a research organization in Ankara.
Armenia has to make a decision, peace for land or land for peace. Also for Turkey, very important to have this Zangezur Corridor open, not only to connect with Azerbaijan, but also with all the Central Asian countries through the Caspian Sea and also through the main roads that the goods of Turkey will be transported to Central Asia.
Turkish-backed Azerbaijani forces last month captured a disputed region of Nagorno-Karabakh from ethnic Armenians, who emptied out of the territory. Observers say the Armenian government, still reeling from taking more than 100,000 refugees, strongly opposes giving up any Armenian territory. Russia backs the idea of a land corridor outside Armenian control and proposes that Russian troops administer it. Armenia's government has increasingly aligned itself with Western powers as it seeks to break away from Russia's sphere of influence. Observers say Moscow sees a corridor outside Armenia's control as part of a broader strategy of circumventing international sanctions by setting up new trade routes through friendly countries, explains Russia specialist Tatiana Matrova, a visiting professor at the Paris School of International Affairs.
Russia is basically rebuilding its whole logistical network. And this corridor is potentially important part of this new network from north to south.
But Tehran strongly opposes the corridor. Iran has close links with its Armenian neighbor and is a rival of Azerbaijan. Last year, Iranian forces conducted drills on Azerbaijan's border. Analysts say the proposed corridor will raise Tehran's suspicions of Azerbaijan, as the Azerbaijanis threaten to cut a route used by Iran to circumvent sanctions. Galia Lindenstrauss is an analyst with the Institute for National Security Studies in Tel Aviv.
If Azerbaijan gets what it wants, it will get a corridor that will be in its complete control without any of Armenia's sovereignty on it, which means it basically does cut between Armenia and Iran. And we know that all sorts of things have been moved through the border between Iran and Armenia, and some of these things are very critical to Iran.
As Turkish-Azerbaijani military exercises started, Tehran hosted peace talks between Armenia and Azerbaijan Monday, with Russian and Turkish foreign ministers also attending. They gathered but apparently made little progress, and tensions continue to simmer in the region. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
The International Monetary Fund has cautioned African nations about the possibility of a regional economic downturn and the ripple effects China's slowing economy could bring. Mohamed Youssef reports.
Africa and China have forged economic ties over the past 20 years, making the Asian giants the continent's largest trading partner. Africa exports metal, minerals and fuel to China while importing manufactured goods and machinery from that country. The International Monetary Fund says that partnership is threatened by China's economic slowdown, its aging population, trade tensions, geopolitics and the ongoing impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. In December 2022, China lifted coronavirus restrictions that had prevented easy movement of goods and people. Gerishon Ikiara is an international economics lecturer. He says the economic problems faced by China and African countries affect the trade relations.
When African economies are affected either by droughts or other problems that may affect the various sectors, the negative effect is felt in China. And if it is also happening in China, the negative effect is felt within Africa. So it is important that both the Chinese economy and African economies are doing well. That will create a more healthy trading relationship.
China's economic recovery from the pandemic has slowed in recent months due to a sluggish property market and weak consumer spending. China's trade data showed that exports and imports continue to decline as demand for Chinese goods waned. The IMF is urging African countries to diversify their economies, increase regional trade integration, and create a favorable business environment for local and international corporations to thrive. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
And that's going to wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States government, through the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, has announced $12 million in humanitarian assistance to the Afghan people affected by a series of devastating earthquakes. Throughout the month of October, four 6.3 magnitude earthquakes struck Afghanistan's northwestern region. The earthquakes and the aftershocks that followed resulted in at least 1,482 deaths and injury to approximately 2,100 individuals as of October 19th, according to the UN World Health Organization. UN officials reported that over 90% of the casualties from the earthquakes were women and children. In addition to the casualties, the earthquakes have destroyed thousands of homes, even completely razing entire villages in some places. This disaster is making an already dire humanitarian situation in Afghanistan much worse. The Taliban took over the country in August 2021 and severely restricted the rights of women, including barring Afghan women from working with NGOs and UN agencies. Since then, political and economic instability has left more than two-thirds of Afghans in need of assistance. In addition to the $12 million announcement, USAID partners conducted damage assessments and provided emergency humanitarian assistance in the immediate aftermath of the earthquakes. Part of USAID's funding will go to the International Organization for Migration, or IOM, who have been actively engaged in providing emergency shelter kits, cooking materials, blankets, solar lamps, and clothing to people affected by the earthquake. Another major concern is clean water. Many households in the region were already facing waterborne illnesses before the earthquakes hit. USAID assistance will help IOM provide safe drinking water and support water source rehabilitation to prevent further disease outbreaks in Afghanistan. The United States is the single largest humanitarian donor in Afghanistan. Nearly $2 billion has been provided since August 2021, with over $1.46 billion coming from USAID. USAID's Disaster Assistance Response Team will continue to ensure aid is reaching the most vulnerable individuals, including women and girls. The United States will continue to stand with the Afghan people and respond to humanitarian needs.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.